Welcome to the Hard Water Fishing Show. Jeff and Jason talk tactics, gear, and ice fishing legends.
Welcome back. We are live at the Hard Water Fishing Show, Season 3, Episode 11. It is the third week of February 2020. My gosh, time flies. Our topic tonight is late season fishing as we enter into late season fishing territory, and we need to change how we think and how we think about the fish. So we believe it's mostly about location, but we'll get in more to that later. Later we'll get into that.
Sounds like you did too much thinking, Jay.
I know. I need to watch that.
It's a lot of thinking.
This late in the season, one should not be thinking too much. So, in order to help with thinking, Jeff, what are you drinking tonight?
All right. So, I am drinking from Indeed Brewing Company Flavor Wave IPA. So, Flavor it doesn't Wave. Have a story. It just has a really cool can. So that's what we're having. So here we go.
Okay. Not bad. I think I'm on repeat here a little bit. Because this is the original, is what I'm drinking tonight. The original. Do you know what that is, Jeff?
Old style?
No, it's called This is the Original. It's in red.
It's just called the Original?
No, it's called Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Oh, PBR.
PBR.
Gotcha.
Here we go.
It won some award.
It did. Somewhere down the line. But it's I like it. It's a good beer.
Sweet.
All right. So on to, there's no business like show business, I guess. Let's see.
Jazz hands are going to sing.
What's that? I can sing it. I got
you. Can do some jazz hands?
Little known fact, I can do those. I will not do those. Wow. It's been a lot of years. I might sprain a finger or something. So, let's see. Our patron.
So you don't want to forget, we have a patron, and we would love to have
more.
We do pay for pretty much everything, and we have no sponsors. So just think of us. You know, if you feel like, hey, I could buy a fishing lure or I could give the Hard Water Fishing Show.
We're currently not a nonprofit, but if you have a big enough donation in mind, we could become one.
Yeah. We are absolutely nonprofit. We're just not officially nonprofit.
We are nonprofit, but not for profit. If you need money to hide in a tax shelter, let's talk. We can probably figure this out.
It's for the podcast. It's starting to wear out, I can tell you.
Is that?
I mean, I've bought too many
that's
things.
That's starting to go cold a little bit?
A little bit.
Yeah. So let's move on. Remember to please rate and like the show on platforms when you listen to it or watch it, if that's what you're doing on, I guess, YouTube. Our most active platforms are iTunes and Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts. Best place to find and interact with us is on social media, Instagram and Facebook social media. We have our website, hardwatershow.com. You can link from there to also a place to buy some Hard Water Show gear if you would like. We do have a YouTube page Jeff tells me about. We have videos, apparently. I've never seen them.
Someday you'll go there.
You can email us at hardwatershow@gmail.com, and we read everything eventually, even if we don't mention it. And that's show business. So we're into reader news.
One of our favorite listeners, Jackie from Park Rapids.
Hi, Jackie from Park Rapids.
So she was wondering, and she only is asking because she heard about it on a previous podcast.
Sure.
What's the difference between a spud bar and an ice chisel? Google says a spud bar is a big A $$ crowbar. Opinions.
Well, you know, this is an interesting question, Jackie, because we got this other person from your area, Dave, who keeps asking a similar question. So I don't know if you guys know each other, but potentially. And so Dave actually knows that answer. So if you would talk to Dave, he'll share the answer with you. If you could find Dave from Park Rapids.
They might find each other.
they they may have found each other at some point. No, so is there a difference, Jeff? Do you know the answer to this question?
I don't. I know I was at Fleet Farm this year. Uh-huh. Well, more than once, but one time when I was at Fleet Farm this year, they had the Spud Bar, which is the long one, mm-hmm. you know, with the little, and then they also had these shorter ones that were like hatchets, I guess. They're shorter. I don't know. Maybe it fits in things better. I would think the long one would work better, but.
Well, you see, to me, it's like a Spud Bar really is designed, and when I say Spud Bar, to me, that's the thing you take out to make check the ice, right?
It's like 5 feet long. Yeah. It's pretty heavy.
Yeah, it's got some weight into the ice. Right? An ice chisel is a thing to chisel ice off your sidewalk. Like if I took my Spud Bar out to my sidewalk, I would probably break the sidewalk. It's like a pointy sledgehammer almost.
And if I took my ice chisel out to the ice, I probably wouldn't break through the ice, but I still might personally break through the ice.
So I think it's about weight. That's what I think. That's my answer. If your ice chisel has a good heft to it, then it may be a Spud Bar. And if your Spud Bar does not have a heft to it, it may indeed be an ice chisel. So there you go. That's my answer.
So thanks, Jackie from Park Rapids, for your question.
And I'm glad we could finally get that question on air. We've been meaning to talk about this for quite some time. So it's wonderful that Jackie asked that question. So thank you.
So should we move on to the next question? Paul F. Ooh, I almost said his name. Paul from Facebook. Do you guys have a preference on the size of hole you like to fish out of? Jason, I'll let you kick this one off.
When I first started ice fishing here a number of years ago, I actually used a 4-inch auger. So I had a 4-inch hole for panfish. And
wow, that's small.
Yeah, well, you know, when you do it by hand, you kind of just, the smallest one that you can get your jig through, yeah, and get the fish back up through. And I didn't have a fish finder, a flasher at the time. It was big enough. It worked for the fish I was catching down here anyway. And now, you know, now I use an 8-inch auger, and that works for me. You know, when you fish Lake of the Woods, we use the 10s. And so after you use that for a while, then going back smaller is kind of weird. This last weekend, I fished out of a 6-inch hole because a buddy had a cage roll with a 6-inch bit on it. So that was weird too. So I think 8, because that's what I own. That's my answer.
I've always gone with 8 because to me that seemed like the right size. It's kind of the, I would call an 8 the most traditional size for a power auger. 10s probably came on maybe 10 years ago or something like that.
Doesn't Ole have a 9 just to be different?
There are a few 9s. I think 9s were popular for a couple years, but then they went to the 10s. And I think in Minnesota, 10s are the max size that's legal.
Oh, I didn't even know there was such a limit.
Yes, I believe 10 inches is the maximum size that you can put. I think it's actually 10 and a quarter, but
really?
It's the maximum size.
That they regulate there. Yep. That.
They do. It's Minnesota.
They regulate everything.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know if there's like hole police that come out with their tape measure. I mean, maybe.
Well, why would they do that when they have your boot?
Exactly. Yeah. 13. So I will say that, you know, I usually use an 8, and I think it's a great size. But when we were up on Lake of the Woods, like we talked about, we put on a 10 on my 40 volt, which worked pretty good. It was nice to have a 10 inch hole because when I went back to my ice shack last weekend and I was fishing and I went back to the 8, I was kind of like, ooh. I mean, it's not like my fish didn't fit up it or anything, but
you could go to that 4-inch auger and probably be all right.
Oh, hey, my 21-inch walleye might not
it
have fit
still
up that 4-inch hole.
It would have fit. You know, some of it, I think, has to do with, like, if you're drilling that sucker by hand or not.
Oh, I would never drill a 10-inch hole by hand. No.
I wouldn't.
No.
I know that for a fact.
I do know, though, it's not necessarily that the fish fits through there, but when you get into some of the bigger fish, you know, you got to get them to turn, and having a little bigger hole does help you kind of get them to turn up the hole. I don't know if it's always the thing, but it and then you have your Vexlar in there, it gives you a little more space. So I'm actually considering getting a 10 also. I think for hole hopping, an 8 is what you want. It's quicker, faster, lighter. And I think for maybe a wheelhouse or something less, you know, snowmobile or something like that, then I would go 10. I'd be up for a six if I was pan fishing, but
yeah, I mean, I think the 6-inch cadrill is pretty popular around here with pan fishermen, and you know, you're not running your, if you're, a lot of people are using the, obviously the drill then, and so you're not working that quite as hard with the six. Plus they're cheaper, you know, they're $50 cheaper too, for the most part on the cadrill.
All right, so that, I think it covers holes. Everything's better than hand augering.
You could also always drill another hole next to it.
You could. Yes.
I've been doing that.
It's
more,
been done.
Where I actually just drill an extra hole for my flasher, especially when I'm by myself. I'll put three out front so I can run the flasher in the middle and I can see both lures.
Yep. That makes sense.
So that's what I've been doing more of lately.
I will tell you that 10-inch one, it gets really heavy and it pushes a lot more ice. I mean, a 10-inch hole and an 8-inch hole, there's a big difference and it's a lot harder to drill a 10-inch hole.
There's probably a mathematical equation there somewhere that we're not going to attempt.
Yeah, I wasn't. But even in the wheelhouse, even though I want a 10-inch, the 8-inch is nice because it doesn't create as much slush.
Sure.
So I can have to heft all that up the wheelhouse.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
all right. Do we have any other? We had some other questions on our Facebook that we put out, didn't we? Is this where we want to cover that?
There was Chris put something out there about he's fishing in Saskatchewan, Canada.
Wow.
Sounds like he's doing, I know. Sounds like he's doing really good in the perch, but then they started to slow down. So he was looking for kind of ideas on what to do, and we didn't even have to reply. A couple of our listeners did.
Which we really appreciate, because a lot of you know more about fishing than we do.
Probably. Hey, if you're in Saskatchewan and you can catch jumbo perch, you probably know more about catching jumbo perch than we do.
Heck yeah.
Some comments said about downsizing or dead stick. I guess when they go slow. I think that's a late season thing, too. Also, there's this Haida lure, which, Jason, have you heard of the Haida lure before?
I haven't heard it called that, I guess. But the technique is something I've heard about, I guess, is what I would say. Do you want to explain to them what it is?
Yeah, so they're saying they leave one lure flat on the bottom and jig with another. And when the marks show up, don't go dropping the jigging lure to the bottom and bring up the hidden one, so it should trigger a reaction strike. So you're trying to, like, it's kind of like a magic thing, I guess. I've never done that. Have you done that before, Jim?
You know, no, not that I can think of. Yeah, that's hard if you're fishing with somebody else in the same shack, like when we're doing some you know, when you're running a flip over with another guy, you have to convince him to leave his stuff on the ground.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like it would work. I've heard of other people doing this. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something to put in the old toolbox to pull out when things are slow. I think, and this, we had a question on perch tactics too, and this, we used this last year at Devils, which is to take that lure and put a drop chain or to move the bait down a little bit below the lure to put a little bit more space between that in order to entice kind of a slow bite or a finicky bite. So that would be one strategy as well.
I think that's the one thing, probably the number one thing I've learned about jumbo perch in the last 5 years was that.
To put the drop chain down?
The drop chain, yeah. I mean, and I've tried it. We've tried it with walleyes and other things now that we saw it work on other lakes.
Yeah.
Mainly Devils.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's more jumbo perch in that lake than any other lake I've ever seen. So
we also had a question. I'd like to talk about this a little bit. We had a question from Neil about how do we, if we don't have the finances for a flasher, how do you locate fish without electronics? And so I've been thinking about this a little bit. You know, I fished without electronics for quite a while before I bought a flasher years ago. But, you know, I think the way to think about that is lake map, if you can get one, right?
On your phone or
on
even,
your phone.
Even the DNR, a lot of the DNRs have some lake maps.
Yep.
That are probably good enough to pick out enough structure to go try someplace.
So that Navionics is pretty inexpensive. It's about what? I think it's like $10, $20 a year now. $20 a year. And you don't need cell phone signal where you're going to use it. You can download the map off Wi-Fi in advance and use your GPS on your phone if you have that when you get there. The other thing, you know, that it's when you don't have that flasher, I think it becomes a lot like almost open water fishing, where you're really looking hard at what's the structure of the shoreline look like. So where are my drops based off my shoreline structure? Do I see weeds coming through at all? That kind of thing. The other thing you can do is if you can open water fish, so we're getting to the end of the season, if you can get on that lake that you're going to fish in the winter over open water, you know, and you have a boat with a fish finder, or you can get out in a kayak where you can see weed beds, you know, through the water and all that stuff, you can start marking stuff either on a GPS or on your phone's GPS to start figuring out where the breaks are for weeds and that kind of thing. You can use the old-fashioned piece of string with a weight and mark it with a tape measure for depth so you can figure out your depths. Drop it down, you know, where 10 feet is, 12 feet, 6 feet, all that. So there's some ways you can start doing that. Sight fishing, if you got clear water, drill a little bit bigger hole, make sure it's a nice dark tent, put a blanket over your head or whatever you need to do to see down in there, you know, to look down, you can sight fish. So there's some of those types of things. Jeff, is there anything you can think of?
I mean, I would go kind of the, I'll call it the social things. Hey, look, there's a bunch of people fishing over there.
Yep.
Maybe I should try to fish by them too.
Absolutely. Right?
I mean, if you don't have a flasher, those people all do, or a lot of them do, or some of them do. So I would go to that. Bait shops, you know, they can tell you places. I mean, you can get the maps off the internet and have them show you places. Resorts, if you happen to be going through a resort to get on the lake, ask them. I also think you don't have to buy the, and I know you were saying we don't have the funds, but try to find a deal on one of the Facebook or Marketplace or somewhere. You know, find, doesn't have to be the fanciest thing, but, you know, find something used. It can be kind of expensive. People like to still get pretty good money for their used stuff, but maybe go a little outside of the norm, like an off-brand, or, you know, those Showdowns are a good option. Sometimes you can find those cheaper. I think you can find some used stuff, maybe even your summer flasher from your boat. It's not going to be perfect, but it might tell you the depth.
Well, and that's actually, you know, sometimes those, you know, yeah, some even your summer fish finders can, will give you the depth, and you'll be able to actually, depending on the refresh rate, see some of your jigging. Just far as even fishing methods, you know, to be working the whole water column more than maybe you would with a flasher, because you can see what's where a little bit better. So you'd work, instead of just jigging a foot off the bottom, you'd work that whole water column all the way up through before you'd move on to another spot. Would also be a suggestion I would have.
You can also find friends, your brother-in-law, your that may brother. Have
one. Yeah. That,
you know, hey, you kind of blink your eyes at him. You know, I'm going fishing this weekend, and gosh, I don't have a flasher. Sure would be nice if I had a flasher. Maybe you'd like to come fishing with me and bring your flasher.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
There's those things too.
Yeah, there is. There is. So, anyway, I hope, Neil, I hope some of these suggestions help you, and best of luck to you. And if you can think of any other questions, we'll try to get back to you and answer those if we can.
So, should we talk about fishing report, or do you want to cover a few more?
What about this question? The weirdest, most bizarre, disturbing thing you've ever seen or experienced while ice fishing. We will get to that in our legend. We've already talked about it.
Yes.
So we'll go back to that in the legend. Okay, on to gear.
Fishing report.
Fishing report. You want to go first? Or you want me to
go
first?
So,
you go first.
You go first.
Let me go first? Yeah. I'll go first. I got a fishing report. So I had an opportunity to fish a couple of times since last time out. But this last weekend, I did a little ice fishing derby on a pond here in town. It was for the Lions Club. They had a little ice fishing contest they used to raise funds for the Lions Club. And so they had a nice breakfast, and we went out to this pond that gets fished basically twice a year. Huh. Yeah, and so it was an ice fishing contest. And so I teamed up with a friend of mine and then a friend of his and his little boy. And would you believe it, we took second place.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And we basically rode on him, his boy, and this other guy's coattails, because I caught 3 fish, and my other buddy caught none. So it was really interesting, because I was expecting this pond to just be, you know, phenomenal, right? It never gets fished.
Right.
So last year, I think they said something like the winning So the rule was they were just looking for crappies and pan and bluegills. And the rule for keeping them was just kind of a gentleman's thing of, you know, if you're going to clean it, keep it. If you're not going to clean it, don't keep it.
Sure.
That was kind of the size limit instead of getting rulers out and all that other nonsense. Because it was kind of just a fun thing. So like last year, the total was like 17-ish, 18 pounds. Okay, in 3 hours.
That one. Wow.
Not total, not size of fish, but total fish, right?
So they just put all the sunnies and crappies in a bag
and weigh measure them and weigh them and total weight. And so this year, ours was like just under like 4 pounds of fish total that we caught in 3 hours that we kept of those species, which wasn't very many at all. So, like, comparatively to what you would have expected, it was really slow. And you could tell it was slow because people were moving everywhere around this little pond, right? Because typically you'd drill a couple holes in an unfished pond and you'd sit there and you'd catch fish. And there was, yeah, it was really slow. But what was cool is the guy we were fishing with figured out, was that we were getting crappies coming through like every once in a while. Like the fish finder would just light up and then disappear. But it would just happen like for less than 30 seconds. And there were suspended crappies coming through. And so once he figured, you know, he figured that out. Because I was using a little Wonder Bread jig for like panfish. And he goes, hey, that's crappies coming through. I'm like, holy crap. So I switched to a Frosty spoon, gold Frosty spoon. And picked one out of the next bunch that came through, right? But they were there so brief that by the time I caught that one fish and got my spoon back down, they were gone. Just like flying through there. But he caught, I don't know, 5 or 6, I think. But it was good. And then we went to another private pond, and it was obnoxious. Like, it was a drop, and a fish would bite. So bluegills. So I brought home a whole mess of bluegills. We actually had them for supper tonight. So... And got Carly out with me, which was great. She goes, yeah, Dad, you just ruined it for me ever to go fishing with you again, because this will never happen. This will never happen again.
That's awesome.
And I'm like, yeah, you're right. But yeah, we probably caught in 2 hours, I think we probably caught 100 bluegills. I mean, they were just, you drop, you caught, you dropped, you caught. You couldn't. I literally went through a whole thing of waxies.
That's awesome. What an awesome
story.
Yeah,
so it was super fun. We had a good time. So Wonder Bread jig. And then is what I was catching most the panfish on, which is a little Wonder Bread jig. And then actually, that's what she was using. I was using, I still use the Frosty spoon.
Okay.
Because I had it on and they bit gold. On it. So there's no reason to switch. Yeah, the gold one.
Frosty spoon.
Gold Frosty spoon.
And the tungsten jig was like a 16 ounce.
Yeah, the little Wonder Bread.
Something like that.
Little Wonder Bread tungsten jobbers from, I got it from that. Widowmaker lure.
Sure.
Guys. Yep.
Well, that's like my a fishing fun report. Time.
Slammed some panfish, made them, and got a meal out of it. And we took second place in a fishing derby. So there you go.
Wow. That's a good weekend, Jay.
It wasn't bad. Got 10 bucks and 3 pounds of hamburger.
I love 10 bucks and 3 pounds of
I
hamburger.
I love Iowa. It was awesome.
That's awesome. All right. Well, I did not go into any contests. I was up at Mille Lacs, got up there on Saturday and just kind of missed the evening bite. You know, it's hard. Things are busy, so you get it out when you can get out. And that meant it was 6 o'clock on Saturday. It seemed like there was less people out. It's getting towards the end of the season. I remember the first weekend we were up at the Red Door and the parking lot was literally full. Like there was nowhere to park. I went up there on Saturday and I'll just say there was plenty of parking space. So just, I don't know if that's less pressure on the fish or people just kind of got their ice fishing fix and are done. This weekend's the last weekend, so I'm hoping to get up there again. And we caught 2 fish, so a few less than your 100.
It was insane.
And I had Noah with, and he had a great time. So we watched movies and caught fish off of rattle reels. So we caught on Sunday, we caught a 16 and a 21. Well, just under a 21. It was, so the slot on Mille Lacs right now is 21 to 23. So threw them back.
Hey, do you want to take a little side trip for a minute on the slot issue or the length issue?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I read an article. Well, no, it wasn't an article. Well, it started out as a Facebook post by somebody and then it moved into an article and then I followed up on it and it turned out to be a real thing. Fish, kind of like humans, shrink when they get cold.
Oh.
You throw a fish on the ice, or you ice them like after you, you know, you catch them and you throw them on the ice or whatever.
Yep.
That they'll shrink yep. up to a quarter of an inch.
Interesting.
Well, it's interesting oh. from the standpoint, if you keep a slot fish right on the money and it shrinks, you could be in trouble.
So you're saying my 2-inch slot is really like an inch and a half? Quarter well, inch on either end?
No, as long, on the top end, you're okay. Shrink. Top end, you're okay. Yeah. You're not going to shrink. You know, you can shrink. But on the bottom end, if it's just, you know, if it needs to be at least 18 or whatever it is, and or 16, I forget what it is, but it doesn't matter. Now, do you remember where we measured these fish up on Lake of the Woods? And they were fine slot-wise. Yep. But as far as biggest fish, where they measured differently back at the cabin they did in the shack, and we just assumed we were bad measurers.
Yes.
But that might not have been the case.
Huh. Yeah. It could be just that they shrink.
They shrink a little bit.
Huh. Interesting.
So there you go.
All right. Well, that's good to know.
Just took you down the road. Mind.
I mean, that one we caught was like literally like, it was like maybe quarter inch shy of 21, but I'm like, you know, back in the lake you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice fish. Noah had fun. He's like, that was the biggest, I mean, kids in fishing, when you're catching fish, I mean, they have a lot of fun.
Oh, absolutely. I have a lot of fun. So, don't you have fun when you're catching? If you're not having fun when you're catching a fish, you're in the wrong, I don't know, you need to do a different podcast, my friend.
No, I have fun too, but I mean, if I'm having fun, they're having twice as much fun when you're catching fish. Like, it's I don't know. They just seem to love it when you're catching fish.
Absolutely.
On the flip side, when you're not catching fish,
it's not good.
Not good. Not good. You know, when we were up there before, there was a ton of snow. That's all melted. You can, like, drive anywhere up there.
Oh, that's cool.
It was cool. We were watching NASCAR while ice fishing.
Nice.
It was kind of fun. I know. It's just something special about watching sporting events while you're ice fishing. I mean, actually, it got rained out, but it was still kind of fun to watch. The fish we were catching was walleye, like I said. We were about 17 feet of water, which is a little shallower. We started out in 24, and I kind of moved in.
Okay.
And that's kind of what inspired our podcast this week about, you know, late season. And from as far as presentation, I didn't catch anything jigging or with any of, like, the lures we used on Lake of the Woods, any of the spoons or any of that stuff. Like, I had some lookers, but nobody took. We caught the fish on a red hook on a rattle reel.
The good old red hook, man.
Yep, and I run on my rattle reels, I run a swivel and then a fluorocarbon leader and then the red hook and the fish on there. But I put like a slip weight above the swivel.
I like that setup. Actually, I think that's a good setup. Yeah,
so actually the minnow and stuff, there's really not a lot of weight there and it can kind of move around. Mm-hmm. So that's usually how I've been fishing, about a foot off the bottom. So that's how we did. I mean, two fish isn't super great, but my experience on Mille Lacs is it's just kind of the way it is. I mean, I don't know if I've ever heard of anybody like that day we had on Lake of the Woods where we caught like 50 fish, right?
Yeah.
I mean, people catch a few and some big ones, but I haven't heard a lot of reports of, you know, catching them till your arms fall off.
Well, and with the number of people out there, I mean, I think everybody catches a few, and then every once in a while, some people hammer them. Just they get lucky, and they're in the spot that day, you know. But if everybody up there was hammering them, I don't know what that would be like. That'd be weird.
That would be weird. I will say, though, this last spring we were up there and in open water, and we were actually, I was ice fishing almost in the same spot that I was fishing in the summer. And I had the whole family out, and we caught at least a dozen walleyes there in an hour. So
that's really cool. They
weren't huge, but they were, you know.
Yeah.
Anytime you catch some fish, the kids are happy. So
absolutely. Absolutely. All right,
so ready to move on to gear?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, gear time.
I like the gear discussion. That's always fun.
It's such a big part of ice fishing, right? Gear. I mean, I don't know why. It just is.
Well, it's, you know, it's all about the gadgets. I mean, that's just a human thing. You know, you go into any sport, anything, any outdoor sport, anything. It's always about, hey, I found this little thing that does this thing better than the other thing I had. And I'm going to share that.
That makes my life just a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the human condition. We make tools. It's what sets us apart from dogs and things. Well, it's true. Look it up. It's in the book.
All right. Scientific research says gadgets is what separates humans from dogs.
Absolutely. Well, an opposable thumb. The thumbs really help. But you wouldn't be able to make gadgets if you didn't have thumbs as well.
Cool. Okay. All right. So our opposable thumbs have allowed us to create bump boards, Jason. Tell me a little bit about bump boards.
Bump board. I don't know. The name is weird, but it's basically a measuring stick for a fish. So I bought a new one, but I'll have to give a report for that when it shows up at my house. I bought one so I can use this Fish Donkey app and maybe try a tournament.
There was a bunch of chatter this weekend about having a tourney on Mille Lacs for the last weekend, and they talked about doing Fish Donkey, but I couldn't find one out there, and I don't know. I might have to email the owner guy, because we talked to him a couple times, and see how we could get a tournament, because that'd be fun. But the tournament I went in this year, it was only through January, and because the weather was so bad and stuff, my wheelhouse didn't get out till like one last weekend in January, and then you caught the only fish that weekend, so
so
that's that. I have that. It's called the Judge, and I think Ollie got the Judge too.
Okay.
Mine is in metric and U.S., and Ollie's was just in U.S., which had bigger numbers, which I was kind of wanted one of those. But you got something else, right?
I did. I'm trying to find what it is. The reason I got this one, I'm going to talk really slow so I can figure out which one I bought. It's from...
Jason, why did you get that one?
It's from the website Musky Bumper, I guess, but it's a walleye bumper one, and it's 36 inches long, and it has, what I like is it folds in half, and it has two little sides on it. It's got the bump for the nose. Maybe that's why they call it a bump board, and then kind of another one on the back so you can kind of put the fish in there and hold it with one hand and hold the bump board with one hand, and it folds. And it also floats, which ice fishing is not super important, but in the summer, if you want to measure a fish without pulling it out of the water, I think that's why that's probably more for their musky end of things. I don't know why you do that for walleye per se, but maybe you would. But for muskies, that's a thing to where you don't actually take that fish out of the water just to measure it. And you can measure it in the water because the bump board floats. So you get up to the boat, you kind of hold it in there, measure it, and then release it without pulling that big fish out of the water and potentially injuring them. So we'll see. I'll give a report when I get it.
And I think I'm going to be kind of jealous, I'm guessing, and I need to get that one. Well, the metal one's kind of weird.
I looked at the longer ones, and my thing is, you know, I'm using that smaller clam shack, and then I have a smaller boat with no storage. And right. So to get a really long 40-inch ruler or 36-inch thing to store somewhere, I'm going to be stepping on it and bending it, and so I wanted something that'd fold up and be a little smaller. So that's why I went with the one I went, even though it was more expensive.
So how do you bend your fish to over the... Do you fold your fish when you fold your...
What? No, don't fold up. Don't. It's not for storage. Do not.
But like if you fold your bump board, don't you have to fold your fish to measure them the bump board?
No, it folds out. Jeez, Jeff. Good Lord. I will send you a picture.
Okay. Well, I think that's my problem. I'm trying to fold my fish in half.
Do not fold your fish. Okay. Well, it was slot when I folded it. Good grief. Good grief. All right, man. Moving.
Okay.
What do we get? Sometimes I wonder how we got where we got. Now here we are. Let's see. So what else do we want to talk about? I'm going to switch gears. So a while back, because I haven't, it's probably been what, about a month? Month and a half, right around Christmas time, a nice gentleman by the name of Timmy Hall, I think is his last name, sent both of us a couple of fishing rods to try out. Timmy Hall.
Yeah.
And I finally got a chance to really give the rod he sent me a workout, and I really liked it. It's an ultralight rod, and it has some really nice backbone to it. It's custom made by Timmy. The guy, and he does this, and I'll give you all his Instagram handle here in a little bit, and you can link to his shop off of that. And what I liked about when I used it this time is that the guides were bigger than on my other ultralight rod, which is that radioactive pickle stick thing from 13 Fishing. And this one, the guides were bigger, so when I was outside fishing, they didn't ice up as bad, because when they did, it wasn't a deal breaker for the rod, right? Like the line didn't get stuck or whatever because the guides were a little bit bigger. Good sensitivity, liked the handle. So I was really happy with it. And I really want to thank him for sending that out for us to try out. You can find him on Instagram at Timmy_MF_Hall, H-A-L-L. And then he has an Etsy shop on there. And if you're on our Instagram, we follow him on Instagram as well. So you can find him from the people that we follow too. So if you look for him there. So I want to thank him very much. And he even put our logo on the handle. I don't know how he did that.
That was really cool. I was impressed with that. We have rods with our logo on it.
We do.
I was impressed.
Yeah, that's super cool. And so we want to thank him again for sending them out. And they seem like really nice rods and they're pretty affordable.
I used mine on Lake of the Woods and I caught a few. And I've never been a long rod person. Like I always like my rod shorter. But this one was longer, but I liked the end. The tip was it had a good backbone, but still had kind of a noodly tip on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it. I didn't catch a ton of fish on it, but that's not the rod's fault.
No, so. It's really not. What I liked about the action on that rod is I could get kind of a really nice jigging action with a small jig with it. Kind of more of a sweeping jigging than like real quick. With a smaller jig, which that's one thing I liked. So I don't know if that contributed to this weekend or not, but it definitely was a different action because of the taper or whatever the way the rod acted compared to my other rods I have. So definitely filled a hole in my arsenal. So very cool. Can I keep prattling on about gear? I have a couple other things.
Yes. Okay. Continue prattling.
I shall continue.
Hopefully people don't start tuning out. So.
Sorry if I lose you. You come back in about 3 minutes. I'll be done. I just hit the fast forward button. One thing that I did notice is I had put one of those Eagle Claw inline reels on that rod. And compared to the 13 Fishing, the Free Fall Ghost or whatever that is, I would say do not waste your money on the cheaper inline reel if you can afford the 13 Fishing one, hands down. Like sometimes you use something and you're like, well, do I really need to spend the extra money? At least when it comes to these inline reels, I would say spend the money. That the one was a lot more fickle to use, the cheaper one, the Eagle Claw one. So those Free For All reels, Jeff, they've got a little adjustment on them. And so you turn that to match the weight of the jig. And so then when you hit the trigger to drop it, it drops that jig down just real gently and nice, right?
Sure.
If that's off, the reel, either you got a peel line because it won't drop, or it just starts rolling, okay? Oh. And if the jig can't go as fast as that reel goes, you end up with a ball.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, and maybe I'm not doing it right, but the one reel.
You're not doing it
the
right.
13 fish, the radioactive tickle thing, whatever that thing is, it's bright green, was very easy to adjust and worked very kind of just intuitively, and I didn't have any real issues with it. The other one I really had to pay attention to and kind of even use a you know, like a thumb or a finger to kind of keep track of that spool. Otherwise, I ended up with a mess. That's my thoughts on the inline reels so far.
And maybe you have to spend a little more because I know with my spinning reels, you know, you can usually get $30 spinning reel, and that's plenty good for anything I've ever ice fished.
Yeah, even the cheapo ones. I've got a cheapo, like an HT, you know, that's probably $15 for the whole combo. It works just fine.
Other style reels, you maybe need to spend a little more. And, you know, sometimes it's kind of a learning curve, right? I always want to spend the least to get the gear that works for me. And sometimes, you know, you buy cheaper gear and it doesn't work out. And so then you have to buy the more expensive one.
Yeah. So on those inlines, I would say, you know, maybe if you never had the more expensive one, you wouldn't notice. But once you have it, you'll notice. And really the same goes for some of the spinning reels too, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think I just look for a good drag on those.
That's the thing about pan fishing. You don't give a hoot about the drag, really.
Yeah.
Right? True. So that's where, okay, so now really to get a good panfish reel on an inline, I'm spending $75, give or take, to get a good inline, whereas, you know, a $20, $15 spinning reel will reel the line up and drop the line down.
The whole thing with those is this spin of your jig, right? There's a thing with the spin of your jig.
Apparently.
With the inlines, I've heard this spinning thing.
The spinning thing, yeah. Yep, so that's my thoughts on that. That's all I got.
I think I had a few gear deficiencies this weekend.
Sounds like a personal issue.
Gear deficiencies. Yeah. I don't think they make a pill for that, so.
Someday, maybe. So,
it's a gear deficiency. Poof, here's your new gear. All right. So I was driving up to Mille Lacs, and I have yet to buy an auger extension. And on the way up there, I'm like, ooh, how thick is the ice up there? And it's not so thick if you're outside, but, you know, in the wheelhouse, you got another probably at least 8 to 10 inch bump
off
of the ice.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, ooh, what do you do if you get to the bottom and you haven't made it through?
You got to move the house, drill the hole, and put the house back.
Yeah, I thought about that, and I thought, God, that sounds terrible. That sounds really
bad. Sounds like a lot of work.
So it does. So luckily, we didn't have to do that. I think it might have involved me driving to a store, but it was late Saturday, and I don't know what I would have done, but I need to get an auger extension. Something else that I have never bought for my wheelhouse is these hole sleeves. So typically, they sell them all over the place, but when I drill my holes in my wheelhouse, the slush kind of makes kind of a, you know, as you drill the hole, it kind of makes like a built-in kind of insulator
because
all the chips go around the hole and it just kind of makes that. And usually that's been okay, but there's so little ice or so little snow on the ice right now that the air is just coming underneath the ice shack. And I was having tons of freezing problems. And it wasn't like super cold, but, you know, you had to kind of go around and check your holes and they would freeze up. And I hadn't had that happen before when there's more snow. Like, we didn't have that when we were fishing last time.
Yeah, they didn't freeze up at all last time.
No, but there was a lot of snow, right? And it was all kind of encased in there. So I think I might have to get some hole sleeves. And I did miss my 10-inch auger from Lake of the Woods, I will admit it. It was, the 8-inch seemed a little small. One thing I wanted to cover, I started a journal in my ice shack, and that's gear-ish. So I started writing that, and I don't know, just something to keep in the ice shack so when people come up, they can talk about what they did. So something new.
Aww.
I started. I know, very crafty of me.
You are. Next thing you know, every time we go up there, we'll be eating salads out of jars.
I have a fishing journal. All right. So let's get into our topic before we run out of time. I got accused always like, you know, sometimes you guys have a topic and you only talk about it for like 5 minutes because you well, spend your time and everything else.
Clearly. Clearly. Like,
guilty.
Yep. That's what if he's just figuring that out now, he hasn't been paying attention.
All right, so we're going to fast forward through our topic of late season fishing. I've been reading a fair amount about this because I was thinking about this late season fishing when I was fishing last weekend. I found this, you know, InFisherman has so much good information, and this isn't like new stuff. This is like, but you know, it's well thought out. And one of the things they talk about is they have this system, which is fish location and presentation, right? And that's a whole nother show that we could talk about that. But I was thinking from location from a late season perspective. And, you know, I was fishing in 24 feet of water and we weren't seeing a lot of fish. We had fished for a while and I had like one or two lookers. I'm like, gee, I wonder if they're moving in closer, like because it's late season. So that's where I moved in, like, you know, 17, 18 feet instead of 24 feet. And we were on the first break. So where we were fishing out there was, I mean, we weren't very far from shore at all. I mean, we were pretty close to shore. So that's what made me think about it. You know, they talked about, in Fisherman 2 talked about having, they have 10 calendar periods during the year of fishing. You know, there's like pre-spawn and post-spawn and spawn and summer and winter. And the reason this kind of, I read into this is that I was thinking, gosh, are we pre-spawn or are we winter? So I did some reading. We are still in winter. It's just late winter. Because pre-spawn sounds like more like April, right? And we're not in April. So
no, we're still ways out yet.
Right. So we're still in winter, but it is late winter. So, you know, they said even this time of year, start thinking about looking for where they would spawn and maybe they're getting closer to moving that way.
Huh.
Yeah. And the one thing they said, too, is like, this varies by year, by weather, you know, pre-spawn and spawn and winter can change. You know, if we have a really warm year, like remember that year we were open water fishing at your cabin in Two Harbors on April 1st?
God, I do remember that. Yeah.
You remember that? So, yeah. So, you know, they would have been in pre-spawn there, but maybe another year where there was really cold and it didn't ice out until May 15th.
And to clarify, we weren't walleye fishing April 1st. We were pan fishing.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Just to make sure people are aware of that.
Yes. Yes, it was not walleye fishing. So they just said, you know, you got to kind of watch the weather and the stuff. So yeah, I don't know if, you know, Jason, you think about location at all when you're fishing later in the winter.
Yeah, I do. You know, and I think it depends on what you're fishing, but I do tend to start moving in a little bit more shallow as the winter wears on and we get towards spring. You know, the other thing is that snow starts melting off the ice, and so during the day you may be in a little deeper, like if you're walleyes, because they're going to have more sunlight.
Light, yep.
Yep, so that's something to think about too. But then your panfish are starting to heat up more in the shallow areas, I think, in moving shallower, as some of that light is now hitting the greenery in the lake and starting to do some things and attracting the little underwater critters that the panfish and other things feed on. So I think kind of as we hit that late season, depending upon snow cover and sunlight and all that jazz, yeah, I think, you know, but I think it also kind of comes into that idea that, you know, if what you're doing isn't working, think about, well, what might the fish be doing? What should I really, you know, are they moving in shallower because of the brightness of the day? Are they a little deeper or in more structure? You know, are the walleyes moving into the weeds, you know, and into the weedy areas as we get towards pre-spawn or even in late winter to get out of some of that sunlight and not wanting to go deeper because the bait fish or whatever have started to move in.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, even what made me start thinking about this is I am fishing in 24 feet of water. You know, now that there wasn't so much snow, I could drag my wheelhouse around pretty much anywhere on that lake I wanted to. I'm like, well, they're not here. Probably need to go somewhere else. Well, I guess deeper probably isn't the answer, so I went shallower, right? Mm-hmm. Thinking kind of this late season, not necessarily pre-spawn, but, you know, getting closer to shore kind of stuff, so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
You know, when you're fishing for walleyes, and we're probably really talking about walleyes at this point, but you're not, and I bought some of these last weekend using red urolarva because I guess bloodworms, I don't even know what a bloodworm is, but a urolarva, I guess, kind of looks like one, come out of the mud and fish feed on those. And so actually, I had some of those when we were trying to, last weekend I was trying to fish with those, thinking, you know, kind of match the hatch kind of thing and seeing what they were eating. I didn't catch a fish on them, but some people do. And that's not a typical walleye bait.
I have some plastic bloodworms, some plastics.
Okay.
That I've tried. I haven't had much luck with them. I've caught a few panfish on them. But I haven't tried them. They're super small. I mean, they're just little things.
I'm still not sold on the plastics.
I know.
Where I've used plastics successfully is a bite like you were experiencing last weekend, where the crappies and sunnies are like super aggressive and they don't eat anything, and you burn through your live bait because they just start killing you, right? But usually, if they're that aggressive, plastics will work, right? And that's where I've used them.
You know, and I know guys, it's all they use. They never use any live bait. They're always using all these plastic stuff, and they do really well. Right. So I always remember, you know, I grew up always minnow in a jig, right? Minnow in a jig, minnow in a jig. That's how we fished for walleyes, cast, trolled, whatever. And then moved down here, or not moved down here, but fished with some guys native to this area. They're throwing just a jig and a twister tail. I'm like, where's your bait? They looked at me like, that's what the twister tail's for. I'm like, well, that's weird. Then they catch walleyes, and I'm like, that's weird. So, you know.
Where's your bait, man?
Yeah, where's your minnow? Yeah. Where's your night crawler? You know, so it does work. I mean, there's a reason they're not selling them just for the fishermen, but maybe some. I don't know.
I've had mixed experience, but I definitely have caught fish on non-live baits. I mean, smallmouths, I've done a ton of that. I've done bass. I've done walleyes with, you know, crankbaits and those kind of things. But
yep, absolutely.
In the winter, I just haven't found that niche where that's working without some kind of bait on it. So the other thing that I found, and this is kind of winter presentation, so we're talking about late winter walleyes, but I always fish like a foot off the bottom. I don't know, generally. Okay. Unless I see crappie suspended up higher or something. I mean, I drop my lure down, I reel up about a foot, and that's usually where I fish, unless my flasher tells me to do something else.
Okay.
But somebody said they actually put their lure like literally an inch off the bottom, and they put a minnow on there. So if you're fishing a spoon and you put it an inch off the bottom of the bottom, they said there's silt and stuff on the bottom, and your minnow will like kick that up and draw attention to it. They swore by it, and they said you'd even see where walleyes will dig in the dirt or the ground to get like maggots or whatever is in the ground. It's like if you've ever seen a walleye with like a beat up nose, they're probably digging in the ground for food. So it's not like that weird to see, to fish that close to the bottom. And they said if your foot off the bottom, it might not work if you're trying to catch fish that are like digging in the ground for food.
For the worms and stuff.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. That's where that camera comes in.
I know. I kind of want one, but like I said, I think my gear budget ran out like in December.
Yeah. You've been on a spree.
So I do have another. I bought an FL8 from Dave, though. I went garage sailing at Dave's used ice fishing gear, and I got a FL8, his old FL8 for Noah. So
that's good. He'll appreciate that, and you get yours back.
Yeah, well, that's more what it's about, probably. So the other thing I thought about was this late season. You know, I don't want to always talk about Mille Lacs, but I do fish on that lake a lot. But really, Mille Lacs doesn't really have a pre-spawn season that you can fish. And the reason I talk about pre-spawn is we're not there yet, is that's when the fish are the most active. That's when they hang the feed bags on, right? That's when they're getting... They're not as active in the winter. They're not as active during spawning. And even at post-spawn or summer, I mean, pre-spawn is when they're most active and most hungry, which is why they're closed, right?
Yep.
I mean, why they're closed in Minnesota. But Lake of the Woods, certainly you have options up there for pre-spawn walleyes. And I think that's why people say, hey, March is the time to go up there, or, you know, because they're getting closer to that late winter pre-spawn time.
Absolutely.
Any other thing you want to say about late season fishing, Jay?
No, I tend to do more of it than the rest just because schedule frees up a little bit. So
same with me.
I'm looking forward to, I'm not going to get out this weekend, but I'm hoping to, the following weekend I've got some availability, so I'm hoping to get out then. And then I think I'm heading back to Canada in March, so I'm pretty excited about that. So we'll stay tuned.
Yeah. Are you excited about that, Jay?
A little bit. No.
Yeah, I hear that.
A little bit, Lake of the Woods in March, yeah, I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going this weekend because Minnesota closes on the 23rd, so this is the last weekend for walleyes, which is kind of early, and the season started really late, so I felt like I didn't get a lot of time to fish in there. And then we went to Lake of the Woods, which was awesome, but we went in the middle of the season too. I'm hoping to get out one last hurrah here before Sunday, before the season closes. And I'm hoping to get one more trip. I mean, I'll do some panfish trips locally.
I might have a lark for you.
Oh,
just going to tease you a little bit with that. March 1st, I might have a lark. I might have an idea.
Ooh. Okay. That's not that far away.
I know. We'll talk. We'll talk later.
So the other lark that we've talked about, and we did a lark to Lake Superior last year, which was like the top of larks. But the other things that are going to come to mind is... on Mille Lacs, walleye are closed, but eel pout aren't.
Pout.
I would love to go find some pout. We've been talking about that, and I have not caught a pout since we've talked about that. And
I know.
I would love to spend a weekend. I mean, my wheelhouse is up there. I would love to spend a weekend targeting pout. That would be awesome.
I think when I'm up at Ron's in March, I'm going to try to do a pout night with Caleb. Take my boy out and try to hammer some pout. Just because he's never seen such a thing in his life.
And I keep on watching
videos. I'm not
sure
I'm going to tell him about it either. Like, he'll just experience
your arm.
Like the first time I caught one. I think it'll be good for him to just experience it in its glory. So.
Yes.
So I think.
They're crazy, though.
We have been.
Those videos.
We've been talking a long time.
Oh my gosh, we better get moving. Okay.
It is. No, it's been a great, I think we've covered a lot of ground today. So, but we need to talk about a legend.
Yeah. So our legend vault is kind of slim, right, Jay?
It's getting a little slim. And so instead of recirculating a half an you know, we don't want to just create a legend to create a legend, right? We really want it to be a quality story. And we really don't, we talked, we really don't have like a super quality story tonight.
Last week's legend, or last time's legend, because we had a little break here, but last time's legend, Dave catching a northern with three lures in its mouth.
I mean, that's a legend.
That is a legend.
That was
right?
A legend, yeah. And so what we wanted to do in lieu of having a decent legend is we thought we would run a little contest. The way to enter this contest is we're going to ask a question, and you need to be the first one to email, only email. We're only going to accept answers by email.
We can probably do the first five, Jay.
The first five. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, we'll do the first five. So the first five to email us with the answer, okay, we'll get a sticker. And we'll email you out a sticker. So make sure you send us your address, or we'll let you know if you're one of the first five. But we'll need an address to send you out a sticker. So we're going to ask a question about a previous legend. And what you need to do is tell us which episode and which season this legend was in. Mainly because we can't find it. We know it's out there somewhere, and we really don't want to listen to all of them ourselves.
Yeah.
How's that? Is
we'll
that right?
We'll do the brief legend since we went so long this episode.
Yeah, and we don't need to retell the whole legend, right?
Right.
No, so it's the legend of... You want to tell the legend, or you want me to tell the legend? Or what the legend's about?
I'll let you tell it.
Okay, we'll simply say there was a legend involving an individual's eyebrows or lack thereof, which is also one of the most disturbing things I've ever seen while on an ice fishing trip or experience. So it fits into that category too.
I would say it is the most disturbing thing I've ever seen ice fishing.
Which says a lot, because yeah, it does. So that's the legend that we want to know from our listeners. Which episode and which season did we talk about that legend in? Be one of the first five to email us at hardwatershow@gmail.com, and we will send you a sticker.
And this is a Hard Water Show official sticker. It's not it just is. Like unicorns and
that would be funny, you know? Though, if we sent them like a unicorn sticker.
Unicorn poop? I don't know. That would be awesome. It's a Hard Water Show sticker.
It is. It's an official Hard Water Fishing Show sticker. And so we'd love to send that out to the first five that can answer that question. There you go.
You know what just hit me, Jay?
What?
We have enough episodes that we can ask a question like this.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
So.
Very cool. Well, I think that's it, buddy.
All right. It was a great show, and look forward to getting out there again this weekend and getting a new podcast next week.
Yeah. Good luck to everybody. Tight lines.
Cheers.
Five. You've been listening to the Hard Water Fishing Show with Jeff and Jason.
Say goodbye.
One of the most unique podcasts on the planet, where we talk about tactics, gear, and ice fishing legends. We'll be back soon.
Bye-bye.
Till then, signing off.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.